Governor Kelly, thank you very much for taking time from your incredibly busy schedule to be with us today. I will now turn over the floor to you.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you, Jason, for the introduction and for inviting me to attend the Manhattan Chamber Power Lunch Series, actually to close it out for the year. Since 1925, the Manhattan Chamber has played a central role in promoting small business opportunities and improving the quality of life for families in the region. It is clear to me and the rest of the state that your efforts to create a pro-business ecosystem in the region are working. In 2018, Manhattan was named the second best place to live in America by livability.com. They attributed this ranking to your city's fantastic restaurants, cultural venues, and bustling downtown. Little Apple is also home to a top-tier university that consistently proves itself a national leader in academic excellence and innovation. In August, I visited Kansas State University's Biosecurity Research Institute and was really blown away by the BRI's ongoing work to support our state's efforts to end the COVID-19 pandemic. The National Bio and Agri Defense Facility will catapult Manhattan and Kansas State as the premier location for veterinary, agricultural, and biosecurity research and expertise. My administration is committed to partnering with your organization and the Manhattan business community to drive economic success and ensure your region and the state as a whole can prosper now and into the future. You know, when I took office, I tasked Commerce Secretary David Tolan with rebuilding our economic development divisions that had been decimated in previous years. Under his leadership, Commerce has restored much needed business development infrastructure to ensure Kansas businesses can compete in a local, national, and global scale. We also recognize that creating a strong economy requires more than what we have in our economic development toolbox. We support our business communities when we build on the fundamental ideas that make Manhattan and the state of Kansas the best place in the nation to work, to live, and to raise a family. Good schools, safe roads, access to healthcare, quality high-speed internet. These are the variables families and business owners seek when they're considered relocating or growing in an area. That's why through the 21 legislative session and beyond, my administration will continue to emphasize investment in essential services like infrastructure, including both transportation and broadband, healthcare, education, and information technology. I'm pleased to say that we've already seen a return on strategic investments we've made to date. While much of the world was on hold during the COVID-19 pandemic, we continued to score economic development victories across the state. Amazon, Urban Outfitters, Merck Animal Health, Schwann's, these are just a few of the new companies we've welcomed or existing companies that have expanded their operations this year. Each comes with significant capital investment and will create thousands of good jobs in our communities. Earlier this year, we announced that the state has officially surpassed $2 billion in new capital investment in 2020, and more than $3 billion in new capital investment since I took office. But as I stated, my administration is looking at economic development through a holistic lens of interconnected services. We can sustain this business recruitment and growth with a quality transportation system that allows for safe and efficient cargo delivery. Under the bipartisan landmark Eisenhower Legacy Transportation Program, commonly known as EIC, we've added $1.6 billion worth of highway transportation projects to our development pipeline. And for the first time in Kansas history, allocated state funds specifically for delivering broadband infrastructure improvements. Through EIC, we have worked to emulate innovative projects like your own Manhattan Business Park, a state-of-the-art hub that gives businesses easy access to both air and ground travel. In October, I joined Kansas Department of Transportation Secretary Julie Lorenz to cut the ribbon on a very similar project, the Turner Diagonal Interchange in Wyandotte County. The Turner Diagonal Project opens nearly 300 acres for private development, is projected to create 2,500 jobs and contribute to more reliable freight delivery times. And if you're asking why I'm mentioning projects outside of Riley County, it's because of our holistic approach will require inter-region cooperation rather than silos across Kansas. By working together, we can continue strengthening these economic tools, advocating for increased access to healthcare through Medicaid expansion, expanding broadband infrastructure, and providing all students with the world-class education for which Kansas is known. It's a whole lot more fun to talk about our successes and our vision for the future, but I can't pretend COVID-19 hasn't created hardships for all Kansans, including our small businesses. Many have shouldered more than their fair share of obstacles throughout the pandemic. That's why my administration went to work right away through my Strengthening People and Revitalizing Kansas Task Force, or SPARK Task Force, to support small businesses. We injected millions of dollars of federal CARES Act funding into our communities to aid in coronavirus recovery efforts, including over $130 million to small businesses affected by the virus and $60 million for much-needed broadband expansion. Recently, we awarded another $38 million to small businesses statewide to assist in funding working capital expenses like rent and payroll. When I created my SPARK task force to lead Kansas's economic recovery from the virus, I knew I must include leaders who understand local economies and what they need. That's why I chose the longtime president of your organization, Lyle Butler, as chair of the SPARK task force. Lyle is skilled, passionate, and has excelled as chair of the task force. I am grateful for his level-headed leadership, his wise counsel, his inordinate investment of his own time and expertise, and his exquisitely timed retirement from the chamber, making him available for public service. As we head into the new year and the new legislative session, we face economic uncertainty born of this unprecedented health crisis. Congress has still not passed additional federal aid, and there's a growing concern of a national recession in the foreseeable future. It's a cause for consternation for all of us as we anticipate how our economy and our small businesses will fare in the weeks and months ahead. But I want to remind all of you that, above all, we're Kansans. We are and have always been dynamic and persistent. We have recovered time and again from every financial crisis confronting our state, including the Depression in the 30s, the Great Recession of the last decade, and the budget fiasco caused by my predecessor's failed tax experiment. With your continued partnership, together we can and will recover and will be even stronger than before. And with that, I'm happy to take some questions.
Thank you, Governor, for being with us again today. We just had a few questions that came in ahead of time. So you touched on, obviously, this briefly, but we are obviously concerned about the long-term viability of our small businesses in light of the pandemic. We do appreciate your work with the SPARK Commission. You and I agree that we appreciate the timeliness of Lyle Butler's retirement. But of course, he was a great choice for you to lead that commission. And there were a number of funds made available to Manhattan regional businesses. What can we do, or what can we expect in terms of the prognosis in 2021? And do you have any sense of how the new vaccine and some of the things that are happening in the medical community might impact the business community in 2021?
Well, it's going to have a huge impact on our business community. We're expecting actually our first shipment of the vaccine this week. Then we will get another shipment in another week, and then there will be weekly shipments of both of the vaccines from Pfizer and from Moderna. We have set up sort of the priority list of who will get the vaccines first. We're going to start with our at-risk healthcare workers, those working on COVID units, whether in hospitals, long-term care facilities, corrections, wherever we have COVID units, we need to get those folks inoculated so that they can continue to provide health services for other people who get sick. So we'll go there. We will, as soon as supplies allow, move into the over 65 in high-risk, medical high-risk communities, and also essential workers. So we'll be looking at some of those frontline workers. I think if you remember at the beginning of the pandemic, we did outline, you know, what we considered essential workers, and we will be trying to get the vaccines to them so that they can continue to provide the essential services for which they're noted. So we'll do that. And then, you know, again, as more supplies come in to the state, we will move to our under 65 and the general population. So we sequencing of all of that starting really this week. And then, you know, moving in, we expect to get the phase one, the healthcare workers and the nursing home residents finished up soon after the first of the year. We'll move into phase two. We expect that to go from, you know, the after the first year into the spring. And then we hope to be able to start vaccinating the general population sometime in the spring into the early summer. So I as I look at the time frame, you know, and all of this, of course, is subject to change, but it really does look like we will be able to have pretty widespread vaccination by late spring, early summer. That will then allow us to get back to that normal that we kept talking about, you know, here. If you know, if we get the resources, we get the vaccinations, and people will get vaccinated, we should be able to pretty much return to a normal production and business operations by summer.
Okay. Thank you for that.
If I could say one other thing, sure. That is going to, you know, that's a long time, you know, when you're operating a business and you've got payroll and you're paying rent. So it is imperative that the federal government recognize that while the CARES funding was terrific and we wouldn't have gotten where we are now without it, we do need more. You know, I, as governor, need federal funding to backfill some of the revenue shortfalls that we experience, and you as a local community also need some of that revenue. So we're hoping that Congress will act soon and pass that second stimulus bill that I think is right around $900 billion. And then after the turn of administrations, that they will come back and address the even further needs. We'll be able to use those funds, not only depending upon what strings are attached to them, we will use those funds not only to shore up state and local governments, but hopefully there will be funding in there that will allow us to continue to support our workers in the state, but also our businesses.
Okay, thank you. You did talk a little bit about the economic development progress, and we appreciate the advancements that Secretary Tolan and you all have made, and we've seen the difference just in the last year. Obviously, we're interested in the long-term strategy. Can you give us an update on the status of the framework for growth?
Yes, actually I have the final draft on my desk, so it is there, and I need to actually get back with Secretary Tolan, and I think that they will then, as soon as he gets the, you know, the green light for me, I expect that they'll be implementing that framework very soon.
Great, and I will tell you again, the work he's done in the last year has made an enormous amount of difference. So please send our thank you to him as well.
I will, and you know, I would agree with you. I'm very pleased with the work that Secretary Tolan has done. He has not taken his eye off the prize during this entire pandemic, and I must say that in addition to, you know, reestablishing the International Trade Division and the Domestic Trade Division within his agency, he has also had to essentially set up a massive grants program to get all of the funding, the CARES funding and whatnot, out to our small businesses during this time. So he's done an incredible job in both arenas.
We would agree with that. Last question before I know you have to go. Heading into the legislative session, what are your priorities for 2021, and how do you view the budget process going forward?
Well, I'm working on the budget right now. And actually, I just called our guy back in Washington, D.C. to find out how likely it is that this $900 billion stimulus package will get passed before I have to sign off on a final budget, because whether or not we get that's going to make a whole lot of difference in what the budget that I'll present to the legislature will look like. I set priorities in budgeting when the pandemic began. I knew that we were going to face a revenue shortfall. So I asked our budget folks to, as much as possible, let's protect those things that grow our economy. Because I want to be able to come out of this pandemic with a solid foundation, unlike, you know, what I found when I came in, where, you know, our economic foundation had been just crumbled. We have rebuilt it. And I want to make sure, you know, that when we come out of this, that that foundation is still strong. So we're doing everything we can to continue to fund our public schools. They're a huge economic driver, and as is our higher education system. We want very much to continue funding transportation. You know, it was my promise at the beginning that we would, or that I would make a serious effort to close the Bank of KDOT by fiscal year 23. We're on track to do that. I want to stay on track to do that so that we can continue to invest in infrastructure, including broadband. I want as much as possible to continue to fund and beef up funding in information technology. You know, if it's very evident during this pandemic, if you've seen what's happened at the Department of Labor, just trying to process unemployment claims, the reason that's been so horrible is, one, the massive numbers, you know, would probably have overwhelmed any system, but they particularly overwhelmed a system that was due for modernization 10 years ago. And the process was started and then, you know, was ended in 2011 to be able to start to pay for the tax cuts. We put that back in place, and we want to continue to fund information technology projects because we see what happens when we don't keep up in that. You know, it's an infrastructure like our roads and like our buildings, and it's something that we need to continue to invest in, even though, you know, it's not real visible and you know, not politically beneficial in any way, shape, or form. So those are the kinds of things that I am trying to ensure we have in place going forward, so that we can recover from this pandemic with a strong foundation. You know, whether or not I'm going to be able to do that, I don't know. It some of it's going to be very dependent upon the Fed's coming through with some additional stimulus funds.
Okay. Governor Kelly, thank you again for giving us a little bit of time today. Before we let you go, is there anything else you want to mention? And then I think you have some other work you need to get to as well. So
I do have a little more work to do, but I very much appreciate this opportunity. I wish it could have been in real life, but maybe next year.
Absolutely. And we're only 45 minutes down the road. You can come visit us anytime.
I know where you are, and okay. I'll be there.
Well, great. Thank you again. And we'll look forward to seeing you soon.